Hello and welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKW 95.9 FM. My name is Ugo Nachibo and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interests in this 1 hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots that make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in the mainstream media. The time right now is 8:05 a.m. and the temperature is 9 degrees. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, Ugona. Thank you for being here this morning. I'll just get the information here. I was away for the whole month of August, and it's nice to be back. getting used to the whole thing of getting back into whatever seems to be normal, kids going to school and all that sort of thing. Holiday time is over, so I had a good summer and a lot of things going on during the summer, and so we're now back once again on Wooden Spoons, and there might be some changes coming up in the near future on the program, which I will be informing listeners about. our guest this morning is perhaps not available, so I really appreciate that you're here, Ugona, this morning. So just to acknowledge that on Wooden Spoons, we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Cree, Ojibwe, Ojibwe Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake No. 40 First Nation and its territory for our life-giving water. So this morning, just to give you a brief breakdown of what we're going to be doing, we have a guest who we will be calling shortly. He is a return guest named Harold Schuster. And so we will be also covering some perspectives, perhaps on the Freedom Convoy and so on and so forth, what is happening there. I have some information on LifeSite News and so on. I'm giving you the wrong information. This is a good start for the season. Basically, we're going to be covering some nutrition information, covering glyphosate, sharing a recipe, and some information on maybe some information on wild plants from Laurel Reeves. And for the first part of the morning, we will be talking to Harold Schuster. And I think with that, the contact is being made.
No worries, Harold. Thank you so much. Okay, bye.
So, were you able to reach him, Ugona?
Yeah. He is unavailable at the moment.
Oh.
We'll probably try him next time.
Oh, is that right? Because he contacted me.
Yeah.
This is interesting development.
Yeah, he reached out probably a bit later on after he sent the questions. I feel he just needs a little bit more time to prepare.
Okay. Okay, well, yeah. This is a good way to begin, because he contacted me, and he had some ideas about what he wanted to talk about, and so I developed some questions around those ideas.
Okay.
It's definitely having to do with the situation between the Palestinians and the Israeli government, and also the positions that our governments and the government of Canada and other governments are taking on the whole situation. So, given this situation, I'm not sure how we should proceed with the program this morning, or whether we should have a repeat program.
I will leave that up to you. I mean, this gives a chance for people to anticipate what's coming up next week, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, and so Harold, well, I'm sure, will be available next week, and we'll have everything sort of sorted out. Everything has been last minute, because of the holidays, and then during the holidays there was a picnic that was held that you organized, Ugana, at Bimini Ridge Park.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that worked out very well.
Yeah, it definitely did. You know, I tried to have it every year, just as a good way of bringing the CKW community together, making sure people have a chance to come, share some food, enjoy each other's company, learn about each other. Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice, and because as people come, you know, different people or groups that have programs on the station, they don't get to know, we don't get have opportunity to meet each other very much.
Yeah, I feel sometimes we're very siloed when it comes to radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we come in, we do our radio show, and then we leave. So there isn't always the platform for community, you know, except for if it's been organized, you know, as in a picnic.
And you have been doing this for several years as the org. Basically, you are an org, because you're the volunteer coordinator, so you kind of organized everything that that involves volunteers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I try to bring people together, you know. I feel I've been doing it for the past couple of years, you know. It started off as an idea, and then, you know, because people keep on coming and people keep on reminding me about it or requesting it, then it's been a staple for now.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. And at one time, there used to be the management as well, but now it's just for the volunteers, and it seems to work out. And that seems to be a good way of doing it, because there is a difference between management and volunteers. I think the volunteers like to meet each other and share their ideas and so on.
Yeah. I mean, the picnic is, of course, open to anyone and everyone to come to attend. Rather than, you know, having like a structured agenda, like maybe the annual general meetings, you know, we have these more loose agendas. You know, we typically begin with some introductions, some acknowledgments, and then, you know, we share our food, take some pictures, obviously, to remember the day, and then, yeah. Very, very loose kind of agenda, you know. We have maybe a time limit or a time frame, you know, typically from 5 to 8. And then we try and have it, you know, in August after that long weekend, you know, we try and have it the following weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because August seems to be a time when a lot of people go on holidays, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
And yeah. Speaking about the station, Wooden Spoons has been, you know, it's kind of, we've been on air for 25 years. 25 years.
Yeah, that a long time.
My God.
Now that I think about it.
Where would the time went?
Yeah. The reality begins to sink in, you know, when you least expect it.
But
and Wooden Spoons is a staple of Friday mornings, a staple of CKW as well. You know, you've had so many guests over the years, you've had a lot of important information being conveyed, right? And you've had a lot of, you know, co-hosts as well.
That's true. Yes, yeah. We had co-hosts and some stayed longer than others.
Yes.
And but John Dick has been here with me for a number of years already.
Yeah.
I don't even know how many years, I'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
I do have a recollection going back many years when we first started, because when the program started, it was my friend Laura Steinman that took the initiative to put a proposal forward. And I used to work with Laura. She and I got Mary Jane's Cooking School going. And the name Mary Jane Cooking School came about because people in the community were starting to refer to Mary Jane's Cooking School. And I used to be doing volunteer classes at different organizations, especially West Broadway Community Ministry. I can't remember how I got involved with them, but I knew the minister there, Ted Nimick, and Aileen Urquhart. They were both the ministers at the time when I was volunteering, and that was one of the places I did. And they also used to get ministers in training. One of them was from Garden Hill, a northern Aboriginal community. And always remember, his name was Tom Little. And he told me, this is kind of it almost sounds like folklore, but he said to me, he said, when somebody gives you a name, like if you're doing something and you get a name, you know that that's the name that you're supposed to have. Well, then all of a sudden, everybody was talking about Mary Jane's Cooking School. That was just bizarre, because I had no idea of... We had... Laura and I were thinking of different names, and then this has just come... it just in the air or something, because I used to go to... excuse me. I have a frog in my throat. We used to go to Mount Carmel Clinic, and the different places, eh? So sort of seeped around. So that's how we got the name Mary Jane's Cookie School.
Oh, what a rich history, you know. And as that fellow said, you know, once people kind of give you a name, you know, you just run with the name, you know, let it stick, make it work for you.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, you know. Mm-hmm. Just one of those things that was a kind of a learning curve. And so Laura and I worked together for quite a few years. And she was married to an elder, Art Shoffley. He was a very well-known elder, and he passed away a couple of years ago, maybe a few years ago, not that long. And so he was very influential with the school, too. He was very... he used to help out. He used to talk to people. And I remember we had classes for Africans from, I'm not sure how this all started, because this is history. we were doing some classes with IRCOM, Immigrant Refugee Community of Manitoba, or something like that, IRCOM, and we used to recruit a lot of newcomers to Canada. And one of the things, we had a lot of classes with women from different African countries and from Afghanistan as well. And so we were having a lot of those classes. And then we decided, we should have men's classes. But we were informed that it was very disgraceful for African men to do cooking. It was like considered, I don't know if you have can comment on that.
Yeah. I mean, if the comment was made by someone from Africa, you know, I guess certain folks, you know, have their own perspectives on what, you know, men should be doing versus what women should be doing. You know, some folks believe that, you know, men shouldn't be in the kitchen, let alone be cooking, you know. So those folks, you know, frown upon having men, you know, do the cooking because that's seen as a womanly duty, you know. But in my family, you know, call us outliers, if you will, everyone is meant to be involved in the cooking, you know.
Well, that's different, isn't it?
It's a team activity, you know. My mom would bring anyone, you know, who was around to come and help her cook, you know, because cooking is a survival skill. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to cook, you know, in order to be able to live, you know. Of course, you know, because the goal is to get married, you know, for some folks. When you do get married, you know, it's typically when, you know, the man can resign from kitchen duties because he has a wife, you know, according to most African places. And of course, you know, in a more contemporary African household, you know, it's encouraged for everyone to partake in the activities of cooking or even in other household chores, right? Mm-hmm. Because it could be seen as a great way of bonding, you know, between mm-hmm. the spouses. Mm-hmm. So everyone has their own different ideology, you know. Some people stick to a more traditional aspect, you know, versus the contemporary aspect.
And it possibly has to do with some religion too. Maybe the, like, there's in African countries, you have maybe a lot of Muslim people. I don't know.
Yeah, give or take. You know, I can't speak for all African countries. In Nigeria, it's pretty much 50-50 down the line. 50% Muslim, 50% Christian. And then in terms of that playing a role, once again, I'm not 100% sure, you know. Biblically, you know, it would seem that the woman is always the one, you know, either came in for the home or doing the cooking, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not typically written, you know, that the mm-hmm. man is involved in that in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, typically the man is described as, you know, the protector of the household or the provider for the household, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And we have interpreted that to mean, you know, that the man is the one defending the household or bringing money for the house. You know, not necessarily being a stay-at-home individual, mm-hmm. you know, cooking yeah. and all of that.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. true. Well, in my experience we've had, we did have we had a lot of women coming into our classes at that time through EARCOM, and we had men's classes, and it they turned out very well. But one time we did have men and women together, or there were men and women together. The women bossed the men around a lot, so it worked very well just having men in the class. And so I'm going to, there's a Somalian student that approached me about having private cooking classes. So I'm going to try to fit this in because we're right now trying to get our curriculum going. We have some funded classes. One of them is from Daniel McIntyre's Fence Neighborhood Association that we have to start up right away. And then we have another one. We got another funded class through, it's at Villa Rosa. It's a school, well, it's where young women get, women that are having difficulties and are in residence, and like teenage mothers and so on. And so that's another project. So there's a lot coming along, and as well as people wanting to suddenly have classes. All of a sudden, I'm getting all these calls for classes. And before, we used to have to hunt for participants, and now I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's good.
It's good. Now I lost my volunteers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a start of a new season, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people are looking for new hobbies. Mm-hmm. And Mary Jane Cooking School probably has a good reputation in the community. So people are seeking you.
Yeah.
For those cooking classes, whether they be private or more public.
Yeah, but I think, one of the things about the school, and I think that we won a few, I don't want to say the word winning, but we managed to get acknowledgement in a certain way. When we first started, we were, you know, we had to deal with a lot of inspectors and this and that, the other thing, and it was very stressful. And, you know, they were treating us as a commercial operation, which we weren't. The word home cooking school meant home cooking, not commercial cooking. So there is a big distinction between the two. In a commercial kitchen, you have to use very strong chemicals every day when you're cooking. And so what happens if you don't use them all the time? The germs that are the most possibly dangerous are the ones that are going to rejuvenate faster than the good bacteria. And so this is where you could get food contamination. In the home, you don't have to use, if you start using chemicals in the home, I think it's a bad way of going about it. Soap and water is all you need. And so having the experience of home cooking is bringing honor to cooking at home and just following, you know, sanitary procedures. You don't have to become a chemical, make a chemical space, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that's how.
I kind of guess you were being audited or investigated in some kind of way because you are interacting with the public, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mary Jane's Cooking School, you know, it offers classes that the public are accessing, right? So they want you to be up to a certain standard, up to a certain code.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, of course, you know, Mary Jane Cooking School doesn't indulge in chemical usage. You know, as you mentioned, it's all about that simple cleaning, if need be, soap and water.
Mm-hmm.
And then just making sure people are keeping to the rules, you know, mm-hmm. washing their hands,
yeah, exactly,
before they prep foods. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, and we have never had it. And then we don't really get, you know, anybody really watching over us anymore. We're like, what is it called? There's a term for that. When you are not
being audited,
you're just accepted.
And yeah,
there's no particular, we're grandfathered in or whatever type of thing.
I feel at some point, you know, people already trust you. you know?
Yeah, after so many years,
yeah,
and having a lot of different people of different groups, large groups, small groups.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we lost one of our volunteers because he had to move away with his partner, whose sister was, they had to move to Regina. So she's wanting to be with her sister who has cancer and so on. So we're sort of in a situation where we're trying to manage to do the different things and without, you know, doing it without having too much difficulty. So, and then we have a mental health worker as well, and she's trained in, she's taken courses and in culinary arts courses, and she's also a mental health worker who has gone through many different training as well. And she's a good, we work together a lot. So that's what's happening at this point in time. So anyway, I wonder if we could have maybe a song, and then I could maybe talk about a few other things concerning nutrition and whatever, the school.
Yeah, I could definitely get us a song. We'll hear Bob Marley, Three Little Birds.
Yeah, he's such an amazing singer.
About a thing.
So that was Bob Marley and the Wailers, Three Little Birds.
I think he's a wonderful singer.
He is amazing.
I could listen to him all the time. So getting back to some of the, just talking about the school and so on, also about nutrition. Nutrition, when I got a master's degree in nutrition at the University of Manitoba, and I appreciated a lot of the things that I learned there. But I also came to recognize that what I was also learning was corporate nutrition. So these were studies that were done by, that were in the interest of corporations that are like different types of programs that supported businesses that were into nutrition, like companies that make food and so on. So it was there. It took me a while. Because I always felt drawn to a natural way of eating, and I was conflicted about a lot of things. And there were a number of things that I had to reevaluate, and especially the issue when it came to the topic of fats. Fats have different categories. There's the fats, the oil fats, the vegetable and vegetable oils and so on, coconut oil. And then there are the saturated fats, the unsaturated fats, and then the saturated fats. And for some reason, and of course I know why, the saturated fats became vilified at the time with what I would call corporate nutrition. So that this was not really, saturated fats was now considered the fat that was really the cause of heart disease. Have you heard about saturated fats, or you should not eat too much butter or lard or things like that?
Yeah, typically I have heard about it, but I often find myself indulging in things that I shouldn't be indulging in anyways.
Well, actually, that has to be debunked, because saturated fats have always been, they have been the mainstay of so many traditions. And my family and my ancestry came from Holland. My grandfather, he had been a baker. They used a lot of butter, and butter is a very healthy food. Now, the term saturated fat, saturated has to do with the molecular structure of the fat. It means that in the molecules that are joined together, they're bonded together, and so they're very solid. I'm putting this in a very simple way. The unsaturated fats are the fats that are not, they have double bonds, so that they have one of the, they attach to oxygens. So they, instead of having in a saturated fats, all the carbons, the saturated fats are made of strings of carbon attached to hydrogens. In the unsaturated fats, you'll have strings of carbon attached to hydrogens, but there's also places where there's a double bond, and that's where oxygen joins in. So the unsaturated fats actually can be more, they can cause inflammation of the blood vessels, and that leads to cholesterol coming in for assistance. Cholesterol is not a bad thing, as we've been told. Cholesterol is a substance that is very healing, and we need cholesterol because it is, without cholesterol we would not absorb vitamin D. It's a very, very important thing to have. Cholesterol being in the arteries is there as a healing substance to protect from the unsaturated fats that get deposited in the arteries. So the cholesterol is there more as a healing substance. That I'm not going to ask people to believe that, but that's how I understand it. And it is certainly understood by other types of nutrition understandings. So we have also, besides having the mainstream type of science, we have naturopathic medicine. There's a whole area of understanding of foods through naturopathy, which is quite different from the more corporate, I would say, the more corporate or mainstream type of understanding. And so a lot of things that we do may not be so healthy when we think they are healthy. Basically, it's just eating whole foods and that sort of thing. So I'm going to just talk about one food as I chose to focus on today, are beets. And beets are finding a lot of beets in the farmer's market. This is a wonderful time to get fresh vegetables and fruits, especially organic. The corporate foods, and this is the thing too, we have a problem with some foods that are, well, they're just I don't know how to describe them, but they're very unhealthy. Well, just continue here. Okay, getting back to beets, I'll talk more about some of the aspects of corporate foods later. So beets are vegetables, corporate foods. In many of the foods that we eat, we're talking about vegetables, they contain glyphosate. Have you heard of the glyphosate?
No, new word to me.
Okay, so glyphosate is... you might have heard about Monsanto, big company.
Yes.
Monsanto, now it's sold to Bayer. Monsanto, going back a number of years, quite a few years ago, decided that they were going to use glyphosate in the food. It's a poison that kills insects, and they put it in the plant itself so that insects that eat the plant will be killed, such as monarch butterflies. The decline of modern butterflies is due to the glyphosate. A lot of it is due to the glyphosate that has been used in our foods. So glyphosate is there so that you get so that the plants will be protected from insect infestation. But itself, it is, and they. Monsanto was able to get approval of it through Health Canada and, of course, in the United States. And so it has never been a problem. Normally, when you want to add something that is different, normally, if you're doing scientific work, you would want to have approval. You'd have to show studies in which this particular substance was used. And so they never had to do that with glyphosate. There's a terminology called GR in capitals, capital G, capital R, capital A, capital S, GRAS, which means generally regarded as safe. So it just passed under the radar. As a result, we have had glyphosate in a lot of our foods, a lot of our vegetables, if they're grown with this chemical, if it's used. So I'm not an expert on this, but just understanding that the presence of glyphosate is not a good thing. It has caused a decline in the monarch butterfly, and it is not healthy. Fortunately, to the chagrin of the industry, Robert Kennedy Jr., I guess he works for the United States government, and he was involved in work with vaccines, and he also has made an order that the term generally regarded as safe is no longer a good idea. That Monsanto, which is now sold to Bayer, has to show studies that prove, that indicate that this substance is safe. So now this company is now doing what all other groups have to do when they want to promote something for the public. They have to show the studies. Monsanto did not have to. It was called generally regarded as safe because of their corporate power. So Monsanto is not going to be happy with John Kennedy Jr. In the United States. So that's one good, I think that's one good thing about this person in the Trump government. So he's doing that, and he's also, a lot of people are very angry at him, at John F. Kennedy. I guess I'm not sure if he's senior or junior, but John, the President John, Robert, sorry, not John, Robert Kennedy. He's also looking into, he doesn't want to go with continuing with the mRNA vaccine. A lot of people think he's, like, the Free Press has vilified him. They think he's very anti-science. The fact of the matter is that we do not know how many harmful effects that our government has never, this has never been something that was revealed, how many people were harmed by this particular vaccine. Not everybody, but a lot of people. And so this makes it causes, I think one of the effects of this particular vaccine is the production of fibrin, which is fine particles or fine fibers that grow in your body. And they can get into your heart and so things like that. So they've been finding this when people have died, that there's this this substance that has been formed in the bodies of people that have taken certain vaccines. So this is something to be, this is a red flag. Anyway, we have never heard about it in Canada because the World Health Organization, I suppose, was trying to promote the vaccine worldwide. And it was, the orders were given from top down from, whoever, the authorities, that the vaccine should be given to everyone. And Justin Trudeau, our former Prime Minister, was also making it mandatory for people to get the vaccine, although it never really got, was put into action, as far as I could tell. Anyway, so these are some of the things that we have to, that we need to be aware of. I'm going to talk about beets because beets are something that I've been picking up in the garden, the farmer's market, which is the farmer's market are farmers that grow vegetables in a natural way. At least that's my understanding of it. And so they're not using dangerous chemicals. It's the natural way of growing food, which is the healthiest, which provides the healthiest foods. So just as beets, for example, they do contain many minerals and plant chemicals, among them being iron and copper, calcium, magnesium, potassium, and sodium. Beets are especially high in potassium and folate. These are different minerals and vitamins. The natural sugars and the minerals found in beets are in balanced proportions, making beets a very wonderful food. The roots are rich in complex carbohydrates. And by the way, apparently beets are good for diabetics because of the type of carbohydrates they have. And they also contain soluble fiber. And vitamin C is found in the beet tops. Beets have a healing effect on the body and help reestablish numerous bodily functions. Folk traditions utilize beets to treat bladder and kidney problems. Beets are considered to be a blood restorative or tonic. And I guess, you know, when you think of the color, maybe it's because of the color too that it would be naturally considered to be a kind of a blood restorative. According to Eastern medicine, beets have a neutral thermal nature, sweet flavor, and they strengthen the heart, sedates the spirit, improve circulation, and they purify the blood. Beets benefits the liver. It moistens the intestines and promotes menstruation. It can be used with carrots for hormone regulation, whatever that means, and it treats liver stagnancy and liver ailments in general. So it is a silicon-rich vegetable. So when you think of beets, this beet, which a lot of people don't usually use very much of, I think, it's really a gold mine of many, many valuable substances, healthful substances. According to the doctrine of signatures, beets strengthen the heart and vascular system. Now, the doctrine of signatures is something we don't really hear very much. It's not considered, it wouldn't be considered a scientific type of understanding or type of knowledge, maybe. The doctrine of signatures originated maybe back in the Middle Ages, or it had been there for a long time. But what it really represents is what it really is about is the understanding that you can tell what a plant is good for by looking at it, by its characteristics. So if plants have various types of characteristics, and if you're wanting to study the doctrine of signatures, you'll have to see what those characteristics are and how that would be healing. For instance, the thing that comes to mind about beets, the color red, it is sort of red, is something that represents the fact that it is good for your blood, things like that. And there's a whole understanding about the doctrine of signatures, which I'm not really prepared to talk about because I'd have to research that more carefully. There's a bit of a cautionary note about beets. Beet greens contain abundant oxalic acid, as does spinach and Swiss chard and rhubarb. So those are substances, if you eat them in excess, can inhibit calcium metabolism. Oxalic acid is also associated with the formation of kidney stones. So eating a lot of rhubarb and beet greens, if you overdo it, it can be, it may have some side effects. So cooking, when we're talking about cooking beets, you cut off the tops, of course, and boil the beets, and you have to wash the beets carefully under water. And you boil them with the peels on, and then after they're cooked, you take off the peels. You slice and serve them with butter and lemon juice, and if eaten in excess, Buchan. So not to eat too much of Swiss chard and rhubarb, because they can inhibit calcium metabolism. So there's always a balancing act. If you overeat something, even though it's very nutritious in some forms, sometimes it can be harmful if eating too much of it. Oxalic acid is also associated with the formation of kidney stones. So when you're cooking beets, you cut off the tops and you boil the washed beets under until tender, and then you peel when cooled and slice and serve with butter and lemon juice and salt and pepper to taste. Beets can also be baked in foil in a moderate oven until tender. Baking improves the flavor. Wash beet greens and cut finely. Cook in a pot in the moisture in the pot. And with the moisture adhering to the leaves, over low heat until tender. Serve seasoned with salt and pepper, some butter and lemon juice or vinegar to taste. Beets can also be eaten raw and grated in a salad. And you have to note that beet pigments become intensely red with the addition of acids such as lemon juice or vinegar. Now, you can also use beet tops, and you can make borscht, and one of the main ingredients in borscht is beets, of course. But you can also use beet tops in other types of soup. The green beet tops won't make your soup red. So it also adds some flavor. To remove beet stains from your hands, you can also use lemon juice. So I've got this information from a Whole Foods Encyclopedia by Rebecca Woods, and that's Company's Coming by Jean Perret on Asian cooking, and another book, Nourishing Traditions, by Sally Falong and Mary Eng. So that's just some information about beets, and I thought I would end up with a recipe from Wild. Laura Reeds has published a book which can be bought at the bookstore. It's a store in the Woolsey area. And it's they sell books and all sorts of things. And she has, I have interviewed Laura Reeves a number of times over the years. And she has a guide called Laura Reeves' Guide to Useful Plants. Laura Reeves is a person who lives off wild foods. She hardly eats. She doesn't eat the regular fruits and vegetables. Mostly, she eats wild foods. So she is the connoisseur of wild foods, and she knows so much about them. Have you ever tried trying that?
Yeah, I've tried wild foods. I like them.
Okay. Well, here's some. Here's something that people might have in their garden, and we're getting close to the end of our program, but it's stinging nettles. You know about stinging nettles?
Not.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I guess you're just not into gardening there, but stinging nettles, you touch them, and they release a very bitter, a terribly stinging substance on your skin. They burn you. So whenever you take nettles, you should cut them with gloves. But nettles are very nourishing, and you can take stinging nettles while you cut them with gloves and chop them up, wash them, of course, and once you cook them, they turn into like a spinach, and they're very, very nutritious. So I guess we're running out of time.
We've got 1 minute.
Well, I don't think I'll just... I can give a recipe for stinging nettles miso soup next, which is a little bit more complex. But basically, just cooking stinging nettles is perfectly easy, just like cooking spinach. Another very common weed in your yard is pigweed. They can be cut and chopped up and eaten like spinach. And burdock. I mean, burdock. So those, have you seen burdocks? Like the burrs catch onto all your clothing, and you get, if you go near them, you get stuck with all these burrs.
No.
You guess you live in the city.
I'm a city boy.
Yeah. Well, I'm in city. Well, I guess it's depending where you're living. But burdock is, the roots are very nourishing, very...